The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on June 19, 1992 at New Raman Reddy Farm in Florida. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 11th Chapter, 13th Verse.
Decorated with festive signs, like plantain trees and mango leaves, all to welcome the Lord. Plagues, garlands, and painted signs, and slogans all combine to shade the sunshine. Report by Srila Prabhupada. Signs of decoration and special festivals were also collected from the gifts of nature, such as the plantain trees, the mango trees, fruits and flowers. Mango trees, coconut palms, and plantain trees are still accepted as auspicious signs. The flags mentioned above are all painted with the picture of either Garuda or Hanuman, the two great servitors of the Lord. For devotees, such paintings and decorations are still adored, and the servitor of the Master is paid more respect for the satisfaction of the Lord. The Swami translation and purport to text 13, chapter 11, canto 1 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the matter of Lord Krishna's entrance into Dwarka. This section of the Srimad Bhagavatam is explaining how the residents of Dwarka spontaneously gave a reception for Lord Krishna upon his arrival. And this particular verse explains how all the doors, city gateways, arches, were all decorated with flags and festoons and mango leaves. Mango leaves are strung on a string and hung. Those mango leaves are considered to be very auspicious. Banana trees are taken out from the ground with the root, especially when the bananas are hanging from the tree, and they put those outside the two sides of the gate doorways. These are also considered to be auspicious signs. Sometimes sugarcane stalks are also placed. Various kinds of natural, beautiful things are placed. Cool water pots with coconuts. When this is a Vedic custom for receiving a guest. There's the different customs. We saw that now and the Indian government, when they received Gorbachev, when he came to India, when he was the president of the Soviet Union. At that time, it was televised. You just happened to see the newscast. And they gave him a Western reception. So then, Western reception is he has like a military. It's very much in the mode of passion. You go and all the soldiers are standing and so you know in attention with their you know grim faces and the head of state will do a review of these our guard of honor. Of course, Rajiv Gandhi did that in Sri Lanka. One of the soldiers took his gun and hit it over the head of Rajiv Gandhi. I tried to do that. He hit him in the shoulder. But there was a guard of honor in Egypt, and they killed the president. But then they had the dignitary stand on a podium, some raised platform, and then they shoot guns off, big cannons. Depending if you're president, you get 21 gun salute. If you're prime minister, you get 19. Everybody stands there and they go, boom, 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 you know. After the guns are going off, then they have the national anthem played. That's the modern, you know, the band playing, you know, the national anthem. That's the reception. That goes on in the modern world. And I just think, considering, you know, seeing that how dry it was, and it's really, really dry. And in comparison, we see here how the loving residents of Dwarka are receiving Krishna with all these natural things, natural. Mango leaves and banana trees and coconuts and sugar canes and then flakes. Of course, still we can see the perverted reflection when you go by a used car lot. They have plenty of flakes hanging around and things trying to attract your attention. Festive mood, you know, come and buy your car here. Can't figure out what's festive about a used car lot, but they try to make it, you know, it's very festive. Carpet. So it's a little like perverted reflection they're trying to, but because they use a lot of tinsel nowadays. Then I go on here and it explains each verse, various arrangements that they've made. In the next verse, Samarjita Mahamarga Ratya Panak Gachatvaram Siktam Gandha Jalai Uktam Phala Pushpa Kshatam Kurai. The highways, subways, lanes, markets, and public meeting places were all thoroughly cleansed and then moistened with scented water. And to welcome the Lord, fruit flowers and unbroken seeds were strewn everywhere. Purport, scented waters prepared by distilling flowers like rose and kerala were requisitioned to wet the roads, streets, and lanes of Dwarka Dham. Such places, along with the marketplace and public meeting places, were thoroughly cleansed. From the above description, it appears that the city of Dwarka Dham was considerably big, containing many highways, streets, and public meeting places with parks, gardens, and reservoirs of water. All very nicely decorated with flowers and fruits, and to welcome the Lord, such flowers and fruits with unbroken seeds of grain were also strewn over the public places. Unbroken seeds of grain or fruits in the seedling stage were considered auspicious, and they are still so used by the Hindus in general on festive days. This year when we went on the Navadvip Parikram to Navadvip, nine islands, then when we went into the villages where all the Dhamvasis, or residents of the Dham, were residing. When they saw the big procession, about 500 devotees were going in kirtan, then some of the devoted villagers, they took scented water and they came out and threw it in front of the deities, or in front of, or over the feet of the devotees, to keep on the road, to keep down the dust. And one time I was walking behind, coming up, because I was doing some management at the previous camp, and so I was walking behind and saw that after the devotees had walked, then some villager was rolling in the wetted dust to get all the dust from the devotees that just walked by on their body. They were so enthusiastic over these devotees from all over the world. So even today, in the villages, they still have the system where they throw scented water. So even in the more traditional cities, we're doing a Harinam in some city in South India, and they're also throwing the scented waters on the ground before the Parikram Parni. Of course, the devotees that were going barefoot, it was all right, but those who had their sneakers on, and they're trying to avoid getting the water thrown on the sneakers. It's like, couldn't understand what was happening. It's actually a very cultural thing. They're trying to wash the feet of the devotees. So of course, these parikrams, usually, traditionally people would go barefoot, but then the previous time they didn't have asphalt and stone chips, so it was very nice. We could go on the parikram in the back roads, the third roads. It was very nice and comfortable. When we had to go on the highway in the middle of the day, it was very hot on the feet. Some people wearing their shoes. So we're trying to adjust things in Kali Yuga. But today, when people are talking about ecology, they're talking about biodegradable and so many different things. You can see that here, there's a big festival, but there's no contamination to nature. There's no contamination to the environment. Everything is very natural, very beautiful. Instead of plastic and tinfoil, everything is natural and beautiful. And that was considered the appropriate way of receiving a visitor, giving him a garland, bathing his feet. When the devotees arrive, to do programs. Sometimes in India, sometimes the people want to receive all the devotees and they offer them garlands. Sometimes they want to bathe their feet. Although it's customary, at least, that when a sannyasi or a guru visits, that there's a reception and there's a foot bathing and offering them garland. But in India, they respect all the Vaishnavas, and often they want to receive every Vaishnava with sandalwood pulp and garland. But that's the tradition. We should see that how appropriate it is, how beautiful it is, how colorful and naturally auspicious. These things are considered auspicious. That means that they are bring a good influence, a good vibration. It's hard to understand what is the auspiciousness of the military review and the 21-gun salute. It's just in the mode of action. But here, these are all natural, beautiful things, and well, the birds are going to eat all the grains anyway from the roads. But in the Vedas explains that when you put the full grains on the road, this also keeps away the subtle entities that are wandering around. It's very auspicious, so these things keep away all kinds of malefic influences, very positive vibrations. So we have our festivals. These are also very appropriate decorations to make for the deities. nice decorations for pleasure of Lord Nitai, Lord Krishna, Janmasthami, Lord Purnima, other sacred days. Sometimes people think, well, all these are external manifestations. That it's really what you feel that counts. But there's these external manifestations which give us an opportunity to express what we feel through our action. We need the outlet for the devotion that we feel for Krishna. And when we offer these things to Krishna naturally, or to his devotees, naturally it also purifies us. These natural expressions of what we feel are very important. So in devotional service, there's many bhakti kriya, or activities in devotion. When the fruits are in season in a particular place, those fruits are obtained and offered to the deities. It's one of the regulations. Flower garlands are offered to the deities. When there's festival days, then these type of special arrangements are made for the deities. All these things are very purifying. Anyone who's participated in a big festival or Rath Yatra, and they have been busy making the preparations, afterwards they know they feel very purified. Although there's so many different activities, it's very purifying. So these are ways that we can actually put our devotion to Krishna in action. Of course, there's also other practical services, offering a feast or preaching on behalf of the Lord. We read last night how Lord Chaitanya was preaching in East Bengal. He was getting everyone engaged in the Sankirtan movement. And that is the real ultimate purpose of preaching, is to bring people to the Sankirtan movement, to engage them in chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada was famous that he was having complete faith in the chanting of the holy name. When he was being given sannyas, that time there was a kirtan party going on during the yajna ceremony. And somebody told the kirtan to stop because it was disturbing the chanting of mantras. And then Prabhupada, from behind, he told the kirtan to wave with his hand. And people noted how he had so much faith in the Harinam. So this is the age of Harinam. And we need to continually engage ourselves in chanting, engage ourselves in the devotional service. Nobody can force anybody to chant, but why shouldn't we want to chant? If we don't want to chant, then we should consider that we're really in a diseased condition, an unnatural condition. Because it's very natural for anyone, any human being, to take shelter of the Lord, to chant his holy name. The more we can chant, the more spontaneously we become attracted to Krishna. The more we engage and we use our intelligence, how to make some nice decoration for Krishna, how to improve the worship of Krishna. Here these different devotees, they're worshipping Krishna when he's arriving. It's not that there was some kind of edict. Everybody has to now worship Krishna. He's coming under penalty of fine and imprisonment for those who do not decorate their doors and windows and put out nothing like that. It was all spontaneous. Everyone was so happy to hear of the arrival of Lord Krishna. Similarly, in the Bhakti Ratnakar, it mentions that when Narottam Das Thakur, he was actually the crown prince of a kingdom, at Keturi, was the capital of the kingdom. But he abdicated from his being a town prince, and he just remained a nice sticky Brahmachari sadhu, devotee. And so his uncle became the king instead of him when his father passed away. So I don't want to be a king either. But he visited Kedari, and he was loved by all the people as a devotee. And so he used a favorable situation there. Although he didn't live in the royal palace, he lived in a simple residence as a Vaishnava. But he was well loved by everyone. So he wanted to organize a Gaur Purnima festival. So he had, with the help of Srinivas Acharya, he had all the Vaishnavas invited from all over Bengal. All the remaining associates of Lord Chaitanya, and there were very few, and all their disciples, so there are quite a few of those. So when the residents of Kedari heard that the Vaishnavas were coming, then days before Gaur Purnima, spontaneously they started sweeping the roads in front of their houses and decorating and filling up with water pots, and everyone was talking how all the great devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are coming. The Vaishnavas are coming! The devotees are coming! They're coming! They're all coming! And then they just, everyone just, they started getting these scented waters ready, started getting all the flags ready, to start automatically decorating the whole city. It was the biggest festival because all the Vaishnavas were going to come. They were so enthusiastic to receive. So when the Vaishnavas reached the other side of the Padma River, and the boats were sent over for them, and Narottam went to receive them, and you know, big masses of people came out with kirtan parties to receive all of the Vaishnavas. And it was very spontaneous, natural festival. That's all everybody could talk about. So the whole place, Kedari, became like the spiritual world because nobody was thinking of anything but Lord Chaitanya and his devotees. So everyone, all the worldly problems, all the anxieties, all the different problems of life that are there in this material world, they were all forgotten. Everybody was absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Sometimes we think that there are so many problems, how can I chant? How can I think about Krishna? I have to solve my problems first. But actually the solution for the worldly problems is to be fixed in Krishna consciousness. That gives us the strength to overcome all the problems and go through everything. Sometimes the problems are just in our mind, you know, sometimes they're real. But if we are able to absorb ourselves in Krishna consciousness, then we're usually able to understand the significance and priority of different problems. So, on this very special occasion, people forgot about everything else, and they just remembered Krishna. Similarly, in Navadvip, after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had taken sannyas, he went to Jagannath Puri. For a long time, he didn't come back to Bengal. After almost about 10 years or so. He went to, on the way to Vrindavan, he went to Ramakeli, and there he met Rupa Sanatan. So it describes that during that journey, he didn't go all the way to Vrindavan, he returned back to Jagannath Puri. Later he went to Vrindavan to the jungle of Jarikasa. But while he was on that journey, then he didn't go to Navadvip Tower, he didn't go to the Mayapur side, he went on the other side of the river. At that time, it was clearly established in Chaitanya Bhagavata that Mayapur was and Navadvip Dham was on the eastern side of the Ganges. So Lord Chaitanya, he was on the western side of the Ganges, which is known as Kuliapat. Kuliapat. And there was the Rav Vaishnava, and he stayed in the Vaishnava's house. And he had a mother, Sachi, called for. He told, don't tell anybody I'm here because that will be, you know. Just don't tell anybody I'm here because Mother Sachi. So they went and called Mother Sachi, and she was brought to see Lord Chaitanya, and she was naturally so happy to see her son after so many years. And while Lord Chaitanya was giving his mercy to Mother Sachi, then I was explaining the how. Somehow or another, like, the word leaked out. Somebody saw Lord Chaitanya, and the word spread. And in Navadvip, suddenly, you know, the word came out that Gauranga is back, Gauranga is back, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is here. He's in Kulia. And the people, some workers were, you know, hammering, and their blacksmiths were hammering, and the potters were making their pots, and the brahmanas were giving their class. And as soon as the word came, Gauranga's back! Then, you know, the students jumped up and they ran. The teachers, they jumped up and they ran. The blacksmiths left the steel burning, and the pots were left spinning, and people, they didn't wait, they just jumped and they ran. Where is he? He's in Kulia. Oh, it's the other side of the river. They just started running to the god. And someone said, where's everybody going? You didn't hear? Gauranga's back! Gauranga! They all ran. They just did everybody. There was, you know, mothers with the milk cooking in the fire, and then they heard, they just ran off. The milk was burning over in the fire. People were getting half-dressed, you know, and they heard, and they just, you know, didn't even have the clothes on right, had it backwards or something. It just, everybody were just running. Gauranga, Gauranga. So it was the whole wave of people, and then you could just hear everyone chanting, Gauranga, Gauranga. So they finally got to the side of the Ganges, and people that were there first, they started jumping in the boat to get across, to take us across, and the boatman said, okay, enough, no more, enough. So many people got on the boat, the whole boat just sank right there in the river. And they're all standing in a boat with, you know, knee deep in the water. And the boat was, how can I take you across here? What have you done? You know, so a few boats got across, but all the other people were stranded. There was thousands and thousands of people. They all wanted to go across. So all of a sudden, somebody just jumped in the water and started swimming in there. One after another, they all jumped in the water. And I said, normally the Ganges is a little bit orange in color, saffron brown. But that day the Ganges became black, because all you could see were people's heads, their black hair. It's completely black. Everyone is just crying out, Gauranga! Gauranga! What were they crying out?
Gauranga!
Gauranga! Gauranga!
Gauranga! Gauranga!
Everyone was crying out, swimming across. They all raced to the house where Lord Chaitanya was. And there was a huge crowd of people. As far as you could see, hundreds of thousands of people. And the householder, he told Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that they're going to break down the house. There's so many people. He had to please reveal yourself to them. So then Lord Chaitanya, he came out. And then everyone, when they saw Gauranga, they all were shouting, Gauranga!
Gauranga!
Gauranga! Everybody offered their obeisances. And Lord Chaitanya, when everyone started to chant again, they had the darshan of Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya then went back in the house, and he disappeared. He was gone. The people didn't believe. They wanted to tear down the house. You know, he had to bring in a few representatives. Look through the whole house. Lord Chaitanya is not here. He's gone. Lord Chaitanya just like disappeared in thin air. And a few miles away, he disappeared and started walking again on his journey. Lord Chaitanya could do things like that. The Krishna himself is nothing amazing. So the people, they were so... They had no time to get the banana leaves and the mango leaves. They just ran. It was spontaneous devotion, spontaneous. So Navadvip is not different from Vrindavan. When Krishna would come home in the evening from the fields with the cowherds, friends, playing his flute, all the Brajavasis would come out to see Krishna. It was called a Nitya Mahotsava, a daily festival. They loved to see Krishna, to hear him play the flute. Everybody would come out. So, that spontaneous devotion, that's part of the Braja or the Vrindavan mood. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to this world to give that spontaneous devotion to the people. If someone doesn't have the spontaneous devotion, well, if they offer regulated devotion, then eventually they get purified through some special mercy of Guru and Krishna, some festival day. Sometimes some devotee can get the spontaneous devotion. But they want to spontaneously worship the Lord always. So this, all the people of Navadvip, they realize that they really felt the loss of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu once he left. How they had taken him for granted, they hadn't given him so much respect, and by their misdeeds he decided to leave. And so many ways they were lamenting, and then when they actually heard he came, they were overwhelmed. It was like people who were dying coming back to life, or people that were starving in the drought, dying of thirst. And suddenly the water comes, or the rain comes. The people sometimes practically dance in the rain. So happy to see the rain. Or that comparison is given as a bird that only drinks rain in the water in the rain clouds. Only drinks rainwater. Doesn't drink water from the ground or anywhere else. So if there's no rain, then that bird practically is dying. When he's so happy when he sees a rain cloud. So the devotees are like that. They're so happy to see Krishna. They're so happy to see Lord Chaitanya. They're so happy to see the devotees of the Lord. The residents of Hastinapur, when they heard that Vidura had returned after the battle of Kurukshetra, they all came out spontaneously. They were so happy to see Vidura. Mr. Pedro Beeson says they're embracing each other, and they arranged him a place to rest, and then give him some nice prasadam, and then they brought and wanted to talk. What he had seen, what was the news, what was happening, policy. We just hear very eloquently asking. Everybody was so eager to be rejoined with Vidura at that time. Like this, there's so many examples. How the devotees, they spontaneously feel very attracted to being with the Lord and His devotees. I remember when we were in Boston to receive Srila Prabhupada, who had returned to North America after a long time. In fact, there was a very big fear that Prabhupada, when he went to India in 1968 or 69, that he went to Europe and he was supposed to go to India, that maybe he was sick then, maybe he would never come back, who knows, who knew. So they were very happy when they heard Prabhupada was coming back, and so from all over North America, at least at that time, the
the eastern part of North America.
The devotees all gathered together in Boston where Prabhupada was flying in from Europe. And there's still some nice pictures of the reception. But I remember we came down that time from Toronto, I believe we're in Toronto. Different devotees in New York and different parts, they all were gathered. There were hundreds of devotees in the airport. And you couldn't see into the customs enclosure. There was a big window, but they had put some of those movable partitions in front of the window. So they were about 6 feet high, so you couldn't see on the other side. But some devotees were trying to look under them or climb up on other shoulders, see over to see whether Prabhupada was there or not. And the kirtan was going on very intensely. All of a sudden, Prabhupada lifted his bead bag over one of those partitions. You could see his bead bag. And then everyone immediately knew that Prabhupada was there and he could hear the kirtan. And the devotees just exploded. I mean, that kirtan was so wild, I don't think people touched the ground. It was just... And in fact, one devotee in the kirtan, somehow he got smashed by a kartan. Blood was pouring down the side of his face, and he didn't even know it. He was so ecstatic in the kirtan, he didn't realize it. But some newspaper reporter was photographing, and someone taking came in the, you know. But even they could see that these devotees were in so much ecstasy that even he was bleeding and he didn't feel, obviously he was very happy, he didn't feel any pain or anything. So they reported like that. There was so much ecstasy that this thing happened. And then finally Prabhupada cleared all the formalities and he came out the door, and then all the devotees, they just hit the deck, made their obeisances. And then, you know, the regular other people that were waiting for their friends and relatives, you know, they were kind of standing and seeing hundreds of devotees, you know, all laying down in the airport, paying their visits. There was television there, radio. People were kind of amazed, you know, what's going on? And then Prabhupada sat down, and every devotee had somehow came with a garland. So they offered him garlands, and they came right up to his, you know, to the top of his head, and then they took the garlands off, and they gave more, and then so that when he would become smothered with a garland, he'd take off, and more devotees would come. And right in the airport, they offered a whole reception and kirtan. So then the television and radio wanted to do an interview. So then Prabhupada explained that, you know, so why are they doing such a big reception? You know? So of course that the spiritual master is received as a representative of God. So therefore he is offered respect and love like God is offered. But if the guru thinks that he's not a representative of God, but that he is God, then he's not, then he's opposite. He's the opposite of God in Prabhupada explained. He's not G-O-D, he's D-O-G. God. So, but the devotees, they were just like so spontaneously eager to receive Srila Prabhupada. That was, of course, then in the temple, there was another big reception, and Prabhupada gave a class. Took a tour of that time the temple was in a funeral home that they had purchased. They had a press in the basement. They had to go down the press and the lift that they used to use for the moving the coffin. It was a quite usual facility. But everybody was so happy at that time they received Srila Prabhupada. After that, I don't know what receptions were like after that in America. I'm sure different devotees have experiences. We have. I went to India after that, 1970, and that was the last time when I was in America doing Prabhupada's pastimes in
physical pastimes, visible pastimes. And on the, in India there were so many big receptions for Srila Prabhupada. So this was kirtans and flags and garlands and flowers. These are natural ways of receiving the Lord and the Vaishnavas. Of course, Dwarka, they had so much opulence, so they could do so many things. Now in Kali Yuga, it's difficult even to get all of these things together. But in Dwarka, we can see that they're very opulent. And they could arrange a very nice reception. The devotional service is something which is completely spontaneous. There's a story once about, told by Bhakti Siddhartha, that one time there was a king and his name was Bhagavan Singh. Bhagavan Das Singh or something like that. And he wanted that everybody should be a devotee. But of course he made a rule that anybody over 18 had to daily worship Tulsi. Otherwise they would be punished. So out of fear of punishment, everybody was doing Tulsi Puja at the evening. So that this Bhagavan Das Singh, he wanted to know what was going on in his kingdom, so he dressed up as an ordinary citizen and went incognito and amongst the people to see what was happening. And he overheard somebody talking. Someone said, "Did you do your Tulsi Puja?" And the person replied, "Yeah, that's Bhagavan Singh's trip. His trip, like, I mean, that's in Bengali, it's like obeying. It's like, it's his thing, you know. We do it because it's his thing. We gotta do it, otherwise we'll be punished." So then he saw that although he was a very good thing, he just wanted everybody to do Tulsi Puja, that would purify all the households and everybody. But because he did it just like as a rule, okay, everybody has to do it. He didn't accompany with a lot of preaching, then send out the brahmanas everywhere. He didn't just like try to influence people by preaching. So just by some order, it didn't really change the minds of the people. Because they're doing it begrudgingly, that I'm just being ordered to do it. They don't do it, I get punished. So, the purport is that devotional service, actually the devotees have to want to do it. They have to, it has to be made, somehow they have to understand that it's really for their benefit. So that they'll want to do it. So, of course, sometimes people, they attend the programs because it's the rule. But they don't put their heart into the chanting, or they don't really get involved with the program like they should. Because of some kind of false ego, or I have to do this, or their mind is somewhere else. Unfortunately, they're missing out on the real benefit. The chanting, the whole process is really meant for everybody's upliftment. And if we perform it, then we become blissful. Anybody who does it, they become blissful. So, somehow or another, we have to convince our own minds about the importance of practicing Krishna consciousness. Just because in the lectures people talk about it, or because the superiors give some instructions about it, we should try to understand that there really is something wonderful there, and convince our own mind, convince our own consciousness that why we have to be in this positive mood. Why it's beneficial for us. Actually, it's the greatest opportunity We can see from the examples of so many great devotees. Devotional service is one of the greatest nectar. When somebody is in a false ego platform, even if it's the greatest nectar for them, they'll think, wow, I'm just being forced to do this. They're not able to take advantage. They're not able to understand. It's really the problem of those people because of their false ego that they're not able to understand the benefit. Somehow or another, we have to, that's the, where the preaching comes in, to actually make people appreciate the glory, the wonderfulness of the Sankirtan movement. This nice quote here. We are put to test and trial in this world. Only those who attend the kirtana of the devotees can succeed. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. The kirtan is what's going to give us the strength to cross over all the trials. All the tests. So, hope that everybody takes advantage of the mercy that Prabhupada brought. The mercy of the Sankirtan movement. Actually, nobody else can force anybody to chant. Even if people do it, it's something we have to want to do. We have to want to do it. There's no reason why we shouldn't want to do it. If somehow we're not wanting to chant Hare Krishna, we're not wanting to chant in kirtan, we're not wanting to dance in kirtan, we're not wanting to serve, it really means we're in a diseased condition. Our consciousness is sick. It's an unnatural circumstance. And if somebody knows they're sick, then they can cure the disease. But if somebody's sick and they think they're healthy, then it's very hard to get them to take any kind of cure. It's like somebody's emotionally disturbed, and then they say, well, you really need some counseling or someone to talk to. No, I'm all right. And even it's really hard to talk to people. Once they can recognize that they're not acting in a normal way, then they can take help, and it's easy for them to correct their errors. So we should understand what is the healthy condition of life. These descriptions of Dwarka, the descriptions of Vrindavan, these are healthy, liberated, spiritually awakened souls. This is the healthy condition that one has spontaneously received the Lord, receive the Vaishnavas, chant the holy names, engage in devotional service. This is the healthy, natural state. And if we're not in that state, then we should know that, well, we're sick. We're spiritually diseased. And we need them to take some cure. We need some counseling from the Guru. Or we need some to study more Shastra and correct what is the defect in our consciousness. Why is our mind in this state? Questions?
You need to speak to your guru. What point can you reveal your mind without becoming guru with you? If you're having trouble. I mean, what should we do?
Why would it be a guru aparad to reveal your mind to a guru? I'm trying to understand the question.
I'm not sure what after what he's saying, can you reveal your mind without.
No, well, a guru aparad is when you do something offensive to the guru. Criticize the guru, neglect the guru service, speak, do something specifically offensive to the guru. Revealing the mind to a senior Vaishnava, to the Guru, in itself is not offensive. If the thoughts, that you're revealing are your offensive. If you're thinking offensive things, then you may want to, that are some kind of critical thing against the guru. And sometimes you may want to talk with a very senior god brother or god sister first to see, you know, to get those doubts and misgivings eradicated, as it may be, you know. That's the only kind of thought I could conceive of that might be offensive if you just started saying, oh, I have all these doubts. But if there's no one else, you can also very humbly say that I have this doubt. And I know it's, I feel it's very offensive, and therefore I want to, you know, get purified from this. But in a group of Christian. Apart from that, revealing if you have some problem to the group, it's not offensive. Sometimes there may be, it's not a major problem, but someone else could also preach to you or help you, since so many times the gurus in ISKCON are really busy with various types of services, so sometimes you can get your problem solved by just talking to a senior Vaishnava. But when there's no one, when no one else is able to solve your problem, you have to go to the guru. That's not an offense, that's a requirement. It's rather, if you don't, you might be doing an offense by later on disobeying the orders of the guru. So then that will be an offense. So if you have doubts, if you have problems, then you have to get it solved. And the guru is the ultimate shelter for the disciples. So no one else can help, one has to go to the guru. And whatever he says, that's taken as the absolute truth. Sometimes you hear what other devotees say and you don't accept it. You don't think, well, that's his opinion, but maybe I don't accept it. And when you finally, when you go to the guru, what he says you have to accept. It's like you get to the Supreme Court, and after that, you know, there's nowhere else to go. The guru will explain things according to Sambhu Shastra and Guru. That's why we accept a guru when we have faith that, in him, that we're going to accept what he says as the final word for our own spiritual life. If we don't have that faith, we shouldn't accept a guru. Shouldn't take initiation, I mean, until we have that faith that what he'll say to me is for my benefit. He won't say something which is detrimental to my spiritual life.
Maharaj described in some festivals that they would take water and throw it on each other and ghee and smear the bodies with oil and turmeric. It seems like this would like ruin everyone's clothes. And the festival would be over.
We say, you know, I think there might be one festival a year, the Cowherd Boys would have a festival like that. I know, like in India, they have the Holi festival, and everybody wears their old clean clothes. Every clothes has its end of life, right? Everything has its soap. It's a good way of recycling the cloth. For the next few weeks, sometimes they wear those cloths. Kind of like a battle. So here you find people wearing t-shirts with all kind of funny things on it. There they wear their holy shirt for a while. It's like kind of victory campaign, was, you know, like coming out of the campaign. But as far as ghee or butter, that washes out. So as far as turmeric might be a little more different. Of course, they didn't wear a lot of clothes. They just wore a dhoti. And the Manajis wore a sari and a choli. So it's not like you lose it. You know, it's not like you get a suna and you lose it. In fact, some people, I think they keep, year to year, they use the same cloth for those occasions. But it's it's not a daily affair. I think they might maximize one festival year like that. That was opulence. The point is the residents in Vrindavan, they were so opulent they could do it. Now they can't even get ghee. In India, practically, you can't get pure ghee, it's all adulterated. But previously, they were so opulent that they could throw it around. On some festival occasion. When we were in South India, we went to this one temple and they had little pieces of bhagat you could buy. There was one deity, it was in the Sundareshwar temple in Madurai. And the deity was color of Bhaira, by the way, of Virabhadra. Who was the, like, the general of Lord Shiva? He was, huh? Alabhadra or
Virabhadra?
Virabhadra. And he was the one who got very angry at the Dakshas. I think he was the one that cut the head off of Dakshas. So he gets very angry. So you, the people in that temple, they all take the butter and throw it on him, keep him cooled off. So you come up and part of the thing, take a piece of butter, throw it on this big baby, cover it completely in butter. He's a stone deity, so. In the Vishnu temple, in Narsingha temple near Vijayawada, or is it one near the Sakapatna, there's a big Narsingha temple, and they cover the deity with sandalwood the whole year to keep him cool. And one day a year, they take the sandalwood off, and you can see the deity with that sandalwood.
Prabhupada ki jai.